Hi, and welcome to installment number two of a program called The Art of Relating. I'm your host, Zach Schwartz. Good to be back. I'm a psychologist, but this is not about therapy or counseling. Remember, it's about us all learning a system together for interacting effectively and humanistically. This week's show is about grounding or your relationship with yourself. It's probably the most basic and the most profound skill in all of this training. So today's about grounding. Remember last week we talked about ground, process, and content as three things to track. Content is what we're talking about. Process is how we talk to each other. And ground is what state of being am I in? That always comes first. So today it's about grounding. But one person asked me a question about last week's show, and the question was, why the talk about parenting skills in our introduction? Well, the answer is because what we learned in good parenting skills is that we have to be loving and kind and non-abusive with our children and want to be, but also at the same time we have to be strong and assertive and set limits. And learning how to combine those things is part of good communication with our children. Well, with each other as adults, it's the same. I have to be considerate, empathetic, caring, validating, and more. And we'll talk about those in time. But also, at the same time, we have to be strong. We have to be able to assert ourselves. You could define a healthy relationship as two independent people. who choose to hang out together, not because they have to, but because they want to, and they act in mutual respect because each demands that. That's called assertiveness. And each offers that. That's called consideration. Those two things work in a balance. I want to be both assertive and considerate, and I want the person I'm interacting with also to be both assertive and considerate. So what does it mean to be grounded? When I do workshops with people, I ask them for adjectives that they think are aptly describing what grounded is. It's relaxed, it's focused, it's centered, it's here and now. It's where I have what I call free will to decide my next response in an interaction. The reason that I call it grounded is because emotional energy is much like electrical energy in some ways, and I want that energy to have some place to go. The ground absorbs it. If I connect to it, if I relax my muscles, if I put my feet on the ground, I am helping myself get more grounded, which is all the things we said before: centered, calm, relaxed, in the moment, free to make a response and not just a reaction. Remember, you have the right to space. It's one of the five interpersonal rights that I think are universal and that we'll share during different installments of the program. Your right to space means you have the right to pause an interaction, to stop the content and stop the process so that you can reground. Whenever you feel like you're not grounded, something pushes a button, you get an emotional charge, you don't feel centered, get used to your ability and your right to call time, pause, go to a neutral corner, and find ground before you return to the interaction. Often when you take space, many people can feel like you're abandoning the conversation, or you're being passive-aggressive, or you're telling them to shut up, or you're not going to listen anymore. It's none of those things. Taking space carries an obligation, and the obligation is to return and resolve. So I find it helpful when I ask someone to give me a moment to remind them that it's just a pause and that I'll be back in a reasonable amount of time, and I will listen to what they have to say. It's like two prize fighters. Somebody calls time. You know, I'm going to the corner to spit and use the towel. Don't keep hitting me. I'm taking time. But the gloves are still on. I'll be back, and we'll continue the interaction as soon as I can get my feet back on the ground. And also part of taking that space, if I do reground, is to what I call clarify and plan, which is to raise my self-awareness about what I'm feeling, what pushed my button, and to plan what do I want to share when I come back to the interaction. So I'm sitting at my dining room table on a Friday night, and my teenage son comes to me, and he says very quickly, "I need $10 and the car keys. I'm going to the movies with my girlfriend. I need to leave right now. Give me the money and the keys." And then my kid looks at me, and I look up from the crossword puzzle, and my kid, because he knows me, says, "Wait." And I say, "Wait." And everybody's quiet for a moment, and I ground myself back to center, take a breath, get my feet on the ground, and I clarify and I plan and I say, "Gee, well, the car keys are glued to the garbage can, and until the garbage goes out, there's no car keys and there's no $10. And my kid says, "Well, I only have 5 minutes." And I say, "And I'm rooting for you. I love you. But until the garbage goes out, you're wasting your time talking to me. And I want you to make it on time. So I would hurry and get that garbage out." And they go, "Rats." And they go running and they grab the garbage and they run out the door. And I wouldn't remember to set that limit or to stay loving or to respond well if I didn't take that moment to ground. So that became sort of a catchword in my house with the kids was, "Wait," so people can disengage and have a chance to ground. So how do you accomplish this feat of grounding? Well, we're going to go through one system for forming a grounding ritual. I hope you each have one, and some of you already do, and stay with the one you have if it works. But if you don't, I want to go over some basic, easy steps for getting yourself grounded, what might be included in the ritual that you practice. So, 5 easy pieces. The first is the bottom half of the body. That's step number 1. Make sure your feet are solid on the ground. Make sure your legs are relaxed. Unlock your knees. Anytime you unlock a joint or relax a muscle, you're allowing electrical energy, emotional energy, to travel through that area. It's kind of like the same system acupuncture is based on a little bit. And so you set your posture. You put your feet a shoulder's length apart. Too wide, you lose flexibility. Too narrow, you lose strength. You want a nice, strong, solid base. That's what connects you to the ground. That's what holds you up. So tuck your hips, unlock your knees, get your feet about a shoulder's length apart. Your toes go forward. If your toes are spread, you'll watch somebody stand sometime and their toes will go out. And that's your basic, what I call, tight ass position. So when the feet go out, your butt shuts off. The energy in your chest and head and hands can't get to the earth because you're blocking it. So get your bottom half set and then move to step 2, which is your top half. Your top half also should be relaxed because, again, relaxed allows energy to travel to the bottom half. And also, hold a shape. Your posture talks to your mind. And if you hold a shape that says, "I'm strong, I'm capable, I am love and light," however you might feel it, put yourself in that posture. Bottom half, top half, that gives you what I call a grounded posture. The next step is to breathe. Take at least 2 or 3 deep, full breaths and make sure when you inhale, you fill both your chest and your gut. Drop your diaphragm so that whole torso area relaxes when you take a breath in like that, and then just let it all go. You know, some people say, because this is Eugene, Oregon, breathe in the green light of compassion through the right nostril. Breathe out the purple light of wisdom through the left nostril. That's all well and good, and you can do that if you wish, and it only enhances the ritual. But for these purposes, keep it simple. Take a full breath. Breathe all the way in, bottom to the top, and then breathe out. Some of you are what we call chest breathers. we're not used to breathing by dropping our diaphragm or expanding our gut. So it takes a little practice. Sometimes if you put your hands over your gut and you, as you inhale, push your hands out, you'll teach yourself pretty quickly how to breathe that way, which I find healthier and certainly more grounding. The next step I call shake out the kinks, which is give yourself a shake, make sure nothing's too tight, your shoulders, your neck, your face, your hands, just quickly. Everyone's got different places where they tend to hold tension, so make sure nothing's in knots, make sure everything can move. Eventually, all four of those steps happen at the same time, and you just say to yourself, ground, and with enough practice, you know, your bottom half, your top half, your breathing, shake it out. It's kind of like stepping out of the batter's box when you're in a baseball game. And when I was stepped out of the box, the first thing you do is stop playing baseball. You just shake out, look at the clouds coming across the sky or the flag in the wind, and you unhook from baseball, more on that in a minute, and relax to let yourself come back to ground, because ground is the best shot you have of hitting the next pitch. It's also the best shot you have of saying something wise and loving and effective. Ground first. So those are the first four steps. They're all physical, bottom half, top half, breathe, shake it out. The fifth step is what I call self-talk. What are you going to say to yourself when you're practicing this ritual that helps you get grounded? And I call it a ritual because if you do it the same way every time, you'll find you can do it quicker and easier. And the ritual itself starts to instruct your brain to go to a grounded state. So nice to keep this consistent if you can. So that last step is called self-talk. There are six that I recommend pieces of self-talk. It's actually three sets of two. The first set are what I call relaxers. Some people say in their head, as they're breathing and shaking out, they say, take it easy, calm down, relax, chill. Whatever two phrases make sense to you that would remind you to let go, start there. The second two are affirmations. Affirmations are not hopes or wishes or magic you want to work. When I say affirmation, it's what can I tell myself about me that's always positive and always true, no matter how bad I just messed up. So what can you say to yourself that's always positive and true, regardless of the situation? Like for some people, they would say, I'm a good person. I may have done something wrong. I may have made a mistake. I may have messed something up. We all do that. We're human. But I'm a good person. I can judge the act without judging the person. So I'm always being a good person, even if I do something bad. Some people say that. Or do I have value? Well, I think that each of us has value in two ways. One is utilitarian. You have values because you have certain skills in your job or at home, and those skills are useful to you and the people around you that you're living with or working with. That's utilitarian value. We all have some of that. And we all also have intrinsic value. As a 300 trillion cell interactive bioorganism living in this universe, if I were a god coming across the universe, it would be mostly space, every once in a while a rock, or maybe even a star, which is great. And then I find you and this 300 trillion piece functioning organism. Well, that's a trippy thing to be all by itself. And when I describe this to at workshops or trainings, people understand intrinsic value, value just for being. So one of your affirmations mean maybe I have value. And that's true. And I'm a good person. I have value. I'm doing the best I can in this moment. Is that always true? I think it is. I could be, I'll say to groups, you know, I'm about to inject a drug into my vein. That's a terrible thing in most ways. But am I doing the best I can? And the crowds I train will say, no. And I'll say, yes, I am doing the best I can. Not the best I can imagine, and I can always imagine doing better, but the best at that moment. If I had some better way to kill my pain or take care of myself, I'd already be doing it. So at any given moment, I can say I'm doing the best I can. So I've got two relaxers, chill out, calm down, two affirmations, I'm a good person, I'm doing the best I can, or I have value. And finally, the last thing to do, and maybe the trickiest, is to unhook. Unhooking is stepping out for a moment, out of the what I call ego movie, out of your present situation. It's letting go of it. Some people, when they're unhooking, just say, let go, or it's not worth it. Other people get more cosmic. They say, I'm just a speck living on a speck. I mean, are the things we deal with that stress us out big or small? Well, that depends on perspective. If I'm standing at the base of the Empire State Building looking up, the building looks gigantic. It stretches all the way to the sky. But if I put myself on the moon in that same moment and look at it, I can't even see it. It's so small. So is the building big or small? Well, it really depends on where you look at it from. The same with the situations we deal with. We're only on the planet for a little while. We're not staying long. We're not keeping anything. All the things that seem so important, and they are relatively important, like the health of our children or the money we make or who's our friend or how we're doing with a lover, it's all only relatively important. So when I ground, I'm trying to unhook. I'm trying to step out of that movie, make it all small. Some people just say that, make it all small. It'll be over in a minute. You know, time passes. So two relaxers, two affirmations, and two unhookers is how we recommend you get started on grounding self-talk. Now, some people just do it with a picture or a feeling. They go to their happy place or they go to a safe place. If I close my eyes, I'm sitting in a gentle woods by a brook. If I keep that image in my portfolio, in my brain, just going there will help me unhook and ground. It's easy, trust me, to hook back in once you're ready to interact again. So when do I practice grounding? Well, first thing is first thing in the morning. Some people I've read call sleep little death, because when you fall asleep, your ego stops being in the movie. You step off and you sleep. And when you wake up, you're re-entering your drama on the earth, re-entering the movie. So where do you begin in the morning? I mean, some people say, well, the first thing I do is use the bathroom. Well, sure, do that, but then what? Find something that you can't not notice. Could be the sunlight coming through the window. For me, every morning I walk down to my cul-de-sac to get the paper, and the cul-de-sac's a circle. And the circle reminds me, time to ground. So I walk to the center of the circle, only takes a minute, and I face the four directions, blah, blah, blah. I do my ritual. I set my posture. I set my breathing. I set my self-talk, shake out the kinks, and I'm relaxed, and I'm centered, and I'm ready to begin the day, which will present me with lots of charged situations to have to deal with. Everybody has them, but I want to deal with them all grounded. So I start my day grounded. Then, whenever I get buttons pushed or I'm ungrounded, stop the interaction as soon as it's practical to do so and get grounded again before continuing. And then, before I start anything, there's something called karma yoga, which is taking each moment of the day and making it a chance to practice. And you can apply grounding in this way by before you start anything. If I take my car keys, I remember last week we talked about conditioning, classical conditioning. If I take my truck keys and I hold the keys in my hand and maybe even jingle them and I say, keys, ground, Keys, imagine myself grounding. Keys, imagine myself grounding. Well, pretty soon, I can't pick up my truck keys, so every time I get in or out of the truck, I stop and ground because the keys remind me to. You can do that with your toothbrush. I do it with my cereal spoon because I usually have cereal in the morning. And my spoon in my hand reminds me to ground. And if I repeat that a few times in my head, spoon, ground, pretty soon, every time I sit down to eat breakfast, I remember to ground again. The more times you can do this in a day, the better. On an average day, I probably do it between 20 and 75 times just to practice, so it comes quicker and it comes easier, and I get more used to being in that state all the time. Now, besides being good at grounding yourself, which I hope you all become expert at, I also want you to be good at helping someone else ground. If I'm interacting with someone who's not grounded, then that's my first order of business, any way I can get there. Nothing's guaranteed, and you can't ground someone else past their ability to get there on their own, but there's things you can do to influence things in that direction to help them achieve that. If I come up to someone at the country fair who's breaking some rules, suppose they're doing some substance they shouldn't do, that could happen. And I come up to them and say, can't be doing that. And they start screaming at the top of their lungs in panic and trauma. Suddenly, that interaction is not about the substance anymore. It's about taking care of them and helping them get grounded by reducing threat, by not crowding them, not trapping them. So what things can I do to help someone get grounded? Well, as it turns out, states of being and emotion are contagious. And when I interact with someone, if I'm grounded and you're not, and we interact, one of two things are going to happen. I'm going to get ungrounded with you, or you're going to get grounded with me. It's part of why we have people who intervene try and work in pairs, because two people getting someone else grounded is easier than one-on-one. But if I ground myself and I make contact with you, there's a chance that you'll start to get grounded with me. So when I'm going to do an intervention, whether I'm going to my child's room to interact with them, or I'm going to intervene in some event, at an event, then I want to ground on the way there. We say walk, don't run to a crisis. It means give yourself a chance to ground, to keep your blood in the cortex so you can think, so you're relaxed, so you remember the use of any of these concepts and skills, so you're always grounding on the way there. And then when you get there, you're making a contact, hopefully ground to ground. And if not, then you want to help them get grounded by maintaining that state of being, and also by letting them know that you're listening. A lot of people get ungrounded, get buttons pushed when they don't feel listened to. So to say to someone, I'm hearing you. I care about what you're saying. I'm listening. I'll feed back. We'll work together. I also sometimes add, I'm not the enemy. I'm not going to hurt you. I'm only here to help. These kinds of phrases help the other person get grounded. And the other thing I'm thinking about in this regard is giving the person choices. Later, we're going to talk about anger a little bit, future shows. And the vulnerability is the energy that causes anger. And as I experience it, the vulnerability that causes anger the quickest is trapped. Trapped animals bite. So when I'm intervening with someone or interacting with someone, I always want to give them choices. I never want to say to someone that you can only do one thing and you have to do it now. That would be extreme. And that will tend to spark their anger. But if I say, oh, you have options, let me go over them with you. If I intervene with someone as even security, I'm saying, let me show you a menu. You can do A, B, or C, and it's up to you. And that person, instead of feeling cornered and getting uptight, will tend to say, oh, choices. Okay, so what's A, what's B? What happens? So when you empower them that way and don't leave them in a corner, they tend to calm down and get grounded with you. Again, None of these things may work in a given interaction, but they all work a lot of the time. And as you increase the time you spend being grounded and helping people ground, interactions will get more effective and feel better. Remember the three chip interactions we talked about last week. And if you miss them, every time we interact, I want us both to win three chips. There's the business chip. Let's get the business done efficiently and to our mutual benefit and satisfaction. There's the respect and love chip, where we make sure we take care of each other in a positive way while we're doing this action, whatever it is. And then there's the fun chip. I'm trying to maximize my ability to have a good time. And the lighter I can keep things and the more positive I can keep things, the more likely we are to get the business done efficiently and to feel good about the experience. Being grounded is a good first step in doing all of these things successfully. So practice, practice, practice. Practice when you wake up in the morning. Practice at every moment you can. Practice grounding. Also remember to keep your awareness up around getting all three chips when you interact with someone and around the priorities of ground, process, and content. Lots of homework. Now, I have a great spouse that I've been with for 35 years, happily married, and glad to be there. And I'll be teaching a workshop to a large group, and I'll say grounding is an important skill to learn. And you'll hear from the back somebody yell out, "That's bull!" And the crowd will all look, and I'll turn to the crowd, and I'll say, "That'd be my spouse sharing that." And they'll all laugh, whatever. And I would say to her between times, "Why do you have to say the one thing at a given moment that would mess me up the most?" And she would say without blinking an eye, "'Cause God designed me to mess with you, and I'm doing my job." And we'd both laugh. And she would add, "You know, if you can't handle me throwing a barb at you, why are you teaching interactive skills?" And she makes a good point. So I learn from her interventions all the time. And hopefully we teach each other as we grow together. Now, next week, we're going to wax transpersonal, which means we're going to work on what I call understanding the relationship between the ego and the soul. It's part of unhooking. It's part of staying grounded. So bear with me as I work through what I call some transpersonal issues. Transpersonal psychology is where spirit and quantum physics and transpersonal psychology all meet. And we'll talk about a possible source of unlimited strength and groundedness you could gain from that. Please remember to send your questions to zach@kepw.org so that I have some things to share from you and answer the next time we meet. And also, visit Dyne Skills, DyneSkills, that's DyneSkills.com, where there are books and webinars and training opportunities and also podcasts of these shows soon, so that we can keep learning and sharing together. And thank you all so much for listening. It's been my pleasure to talk to you today. I'm going to take these headphones off and go ground myself right now because this is challenging, but lots of fun. So be well.